And Stephen Stilton joining us here in studio. And with that, you know, here for the next couple of segments, there's a lot of things that shock us in the sports world. One of those stories that we'll get to here in a couple minutes that has shocked, I think, many people here this NBA season. Well, we're a little bit shocked at what's going on at the barn right now. We have it up on the television monitors. Michigan and Minnesota, they're headed to overtime.
Wow, and distracted.
71-71. How about that? I said this morning on the morning news of Anita Sarkar, they have no shot at winning this game. I couldn't have been more wrong.
Well, and my question to you as I walked in the studio is, will Minnesota win a Big Ten game all season?
Oh, you said that? I didn't hear you say that.
Thank you. Thank you for forgetting.
I wasn't paying attention.
I'll cop to it. But
yeah, they'll win a Big Ten game.
There's only four fans left. Jack Fitterman, Steve Honigs, and then two or three random people who will show up at
the... I'm a fan. You're a fan. Tim Cheetah, former MLB umpire, is in attendance tonight. He said he might call the show a little bit later. He's going to call later now because they're going in overtime.
You know what the most valuable player at the University of Minnesota Gopher games are?
Ooh.
Is the cameraman, to keep a very narrow focus so you only see the first two rows.
Not doing a wide shot?
They only do the first two rows.
Do you think I take shots
You're
at
such
you
a
them?
Hater. He's such a hater. Oh, man. How you been?
Good. Yeah, it's 2025 is starting out just fine.
That's good. All right, and real quick before we get into things. You know, people will hear, you know, Stephen Stilton on the airways. But, man, who is this big shot that's always coming on the late show? He's got this open and Colson O'Connor. But you're an attorney, and you still take on other clients. So people out there listening to you, and they like what they hear, and they know that you're a personality and a great attorney. You know what? You're open for business,
yeah,
man.
Yeah, have gun, will travel. I'm still working. I mean, I cannot live on the checks I get here alone.
Thank you.
Exactly. I hear you, man. I'm with you.
Yes. I know you can't either.
I'm selling myself, too.
Yeah, you've got a side hustler, too. So
I got a couple of them.
Yes. So, no, it's you know, first off, I like practicing law. I like solving people's problems. So, yeah.
You've been a lawyer for how long?
Oh, my God. That's a scary question. Since 1995.
I mean, that's not exposing your age too much.
That's 30 years. You know, when I was a young lawyer, I had my own practice for essentially the first 8 years of my practice.
Uh-huh.
I used to tell people I practiced law in dog years because, you know, I was a young lawyer and trying to represent kind of very substantive clients. I would have been dead for like 30 years if I was that. You know, it's very quickly you go from – I remember when you were one of the youngest media – personalities.
And that was a long time ago. But that was late 90s.
But it flips like this. You know what I mean?
Yep.
One day you're the youngest person in the room, and the next day you're not.
All right, so let me ask you this real quick. And this is – I don't want to say – you have to answer this with the person that you can actually mention on the airwaves.
Okay.
Who was the biggest name client that you've ever had that you can publicly mention on air?
Well, I've had a whole bunch. Obviously, being involved in the Prince case was probably the highest profile case I ever had. I represented three of the heirs in that case at different times in the case. My co-counsel was Van Jones from CNN, who I still to this day have a very close relationship with. You know, I've represented, you know, professional sports teams, you know, Minnesota Vikings, the Minnesota Wild, been involved in representing numerous owners. A lot of professional athletes. Early in my career, I represented a lot of pro athletes through the Rosenhauses, right, who mm-hmm. are also a client. So, you know, listen, I've had the opportunity, you know, I guess if you're around long enough, you get to experience some really fun and interesting things. And I've had a really wide range of clients. Most of my clients, though, frankly, 80% are just your standard vanilla, great Minnesota businesses. Energy Management Collaborative, Fair Isaac.
He's trying to get away from the big wigs. Look at, he's trying to call
yes,
it
no,
down.
Yes, no, I want to give, listen, I want to give props to the clients, frankly, that have built my house, right? So
yeah.
It's like, you know, some of those standard vanilla clients have really been loyal with me for many, many years. So I've been, I've been fortunate. Okay, 70. My gosh, winning.
They were just up. They were up three just a few minutes ago. All right, real quick. So the first story I want to get back to is this situation with Jontay Porter.
Yep.
Former NBA player because he got banned for life.
And brother is still an big-time NBA player.
His brother is Michael Porter Jr., yep. One of the stars of the Denver Nuggets. But more information has come out because the court docs have come out with regards to how deep or in-depth this was with regards to him being a part of this scandal of sports wagering. He was texting people that were in with him on the wagers, and he was literally at halftime or in his locker, like texting these people that were involved in this. One of the texts is he said, "No blocks, no steals. I'm going to play first 2 to 3 minutes stint off the bench. Then when I get subbed out, tell them my eye killing me again." This is something, I mean, this is such a massive conspiracy with regards to wire fraud and sports wagering. I've never seen anything to this extent. Well, like we can sit here and we can talk about Pete Rose and all these other, you know, people from years ago, but like, this is a guy during a game that's texting people that he's in on these wagering events with. What's going to transpire? Well, and he's faking injuries.
Well, he's going to go to jail is what's going to transpire. I do think it's shades of Pete Rose. Remember when he was the manager of the Reds, he was actually signaling his bookie who was in the stands. I mean, imagine if Pete Rose had a cell phone and was able to make these type of prop bets, right?
Yep.
I mean, I think what's kind of interesting about this is the proliferation. You know, sports gaming is not what we remember when we were young. You know, making bets on a numerous amount of games on a weekend, you know, or football or basketball. These are moment-to-moment, instant-to-instant prop bets. This is, you know, sports gaming on, it's not even steroids. It's on, you know, steroids on crack. It's just, it's a very different world. And frankly, you know, I don't think anyone's really come to grips with it. But he's in big, big trouble.
Man, I find it unbelievable. But let me ask you this question. We've seen NFL players, NBA players, we've seen people get caught up in this stuff. Why are we seeing more professional athletes that get caught up in this as opposed to NCAA athletes? Because to me, when I think about the big story with an NCAA athlete was the Arizona State point guard years ago. I think it was his name was Steve Smith. And he got caught up in a situation where he got caught with, you know, point shaving.
Yeah, good old-fashioned point shaving.
Why do we see it more with professional guys that have the bag as opposed to college athletics?
I think it happens historically more with college, particularly pre-NIL, mm-hmm. when they had no money at all. I mean, there was that famous kind of, when was that situation where the mob actually got involved in college sports gaming? I think it was that Jack Nicholson played him. Whitey Bulger kind of did.
The former mob guy?
Yeah, former mob guy did a very kind of complex point shaving in college. I mean, I think nowadays, listen, and you and I have talked about this, the proliferation of gaming in professional sports is unbelievable. And it's, you know, it's omnipresent, right? You go on ESPN and, you know, they have all round, they have all of the betting lines and all of the prop lines, and they have shows on, you know, how to make these parlay, these prop bets, which frankly are super exciting, and they can make games really, you know, interesting.
Yep.
And the players are immersed in it. And I think it's really hard for them to separate, frankly, sports from gaming nowadays. I mean, remember when Jimmy the Greek essentially got suspended? He got suspended, essentially fired for
the racial stuff.
But this was before that. Mm-hmm. He got suspended for mentioning lines, right? He used to talk about gambling, but he couldn't state the actual lines.
And now we can't escape it.
Right now, it's everywhere.
Yeah.
Right now, it's, you know,
we openly talk about it all the time.
Absolutely. Yeah. And it's a part of mainstream. I mean, some of the new stadiums are actually being fitted with essentially gaming stations to be able to make all these prop bets because people are doing it at home and they don't want to go into the stadium when they can't make those type of bets.
But now let me ask you this with regards to this the with the NBA and NFL and all stuff, whatever, don't you think that we're going to get to a point, though, where a person's going to be able to go show up at the arena, there's going to be a kiosk, because it's been talked about for the last several years, make a wager before the game starts, and then just go sit down and just enjoy the game. Why not do that? Why not have that available?
Because that's not how people bet anymore. That's too slow. People don't want to bet the Vikings +3 against Seattle. They want to place these constant bets. The live betting process. Most sports gamblers, if they're betting on a game, don't place one bet on a game. They will place multiple bets throughout the game depending on the fluctuation of the line.
No, but what I'm saying is this gives an opportunity for the teams to get in on it and basically at the end of a game, be able to cash you out right there at the arena.
That would be, I mean, that is coming. That happens overseas in EPL games. They have live, they have the gambling right there. It's very much a part of the culture. It's not as much a part of the culture here, but it's definitely gonna come. I mean, what do you need that? Nobody has cash anymore. So the reality is you can bet now on cash underdog sports. I mean, sports gaming technically isn't legal in Minnesota, but there are a number of sites that essentially allow for what looks like and what is sports gambling, right? You can make parlay bets based on prop betting on players. You can't bet on teams, but you can prop bet on players.
All right, 651-461-9226. Real quickly, that player that I was mentioning from years ago, that was Stephen Smith. Yes, Stephen Headache Smith. That was back in the mid-90s. Arizona State point guard received a sizable payment of $20,000 per fixed game. The equivalent now, adjusting for inflation, that's equivalent to around $40,000 now. Back then, but yeah, he was doing the stuff. And that was back in the mid-90s. He was a damn good point guard at that specific time. We'll take a break. We'll come back with more Stephen Silden from Colson O'Connor, and also probably a final score from the Minnesota Golden Gophers hosting the Michigan Wolverines. Gophers up by 2 in overtime. This is the Lake Show. The execution was horrible, but the Minnesota Golden Gophers have pulled off a massive upset. Wow. At the buzzer. Was that Dawson Garcia?
I don't know who that was. The 18 people at the game are now on the floor.
Unbelievable. Storm the court, Tim Cheetah. Storm the court, Tim Cheetah.
Oh my gosh.
Unbelievable. All right, Ben Johnson. Good job, baby. Wow.
That was a good game. That was an excellent, excellent, excellent basketball game.
That's insane, dude.
That is
insane.
Maybe we needed that to break to break the Minnesota kind of sports curse we've had the last week. Right?
Will it mean any? Well, you just asked me the question. You said, are we going to go win this? I was like, of course not. We're going to win.
Yeah.
I just say tonight. My God, that's unbelievable. So just so you guys understand, the Gophers were at the line, and they were up 2. Lukai Patterson had an opportunity to push it to 3 points. He missed the second of 2 free throws. And by the way, Lukai Patterson had an unbelievable night. He had a great night. And so he Michigan gets the rebound. The Wolf kid, who everybody is like, he's a first-round pick, he goes all the way down the court and just bullies his way into a 2-point basket. They inbound the ball.
The Gophers practically lost the ball.
Almost lost the ball out of bounds. Lukai pushes it down. He gets it to Dawson Garcia. He flings up damn near a half-court 3, and it goes in. Unbelievable. That'll be Sports Center Top 10.
That was from the M at midcourt. That was from the M. It was, hey, sometimes you need it.
You do. And listen, that's what makes college sports so good. And we're going to have to
By the way, the text line is already saying, from the 320, Henry, apology segment with Vanita tomorrow morning regarding Ben Johnson and the Gophers beating number 20 Michigan. No, there will not be an apology segment.
No.
Because there's no, yes, you want the Maroon and Gold to win. Was there any chance that I was going to go on the radio and did I think that they were going to beat Michigan? Of course not. So no, I'm not going to apologize for anything.
Yeah, absolutely not. I mean, the Gopher basketball program is still a mess.
You walked in here and said, are they going to win a game?
All year at the Big Ten. I mean, that is a legitimate concern. I mean, listen, some of these individual players on that team, Dawson Garcia is one of them. These guys play incredibly hard. But Ben Johnson, to me, the problem I've always had is not only does he not bring the right talent to the court, he doesn't coach them in the best way to win, right? I mean, when they've had these kind of undersized, under-talented teams, he plays a lackadaisical defense. He sets up in this lazy zone. He doesn't do what the great college coaches, the Bobby Knights, when he had average teams.
Yeah, when was Bobby Knight's teams average?
I mean,
look at the talent he had. He had the Isaiah Thomases of the world coming through Indiana.
Ricky Callaway.
Like, guys that I would mention now, you'd be like, who the hell is that? And these were like McDonald's All-Americans. Like, you don't even know who Ricky Callaway was.
Yeah, I mean, Keith Smart. I mean, he had some good teams, but he had some average teams.
Steve Alford.
I mean, Steve Alford was an above average college player. I mean, Steve Alford is not. You can't put Isaiah Thomas Alford.
Wait.
Yeah.
Steve Alford was an above average college basketball.
I mean, he was a great college player, but he's
a legendary college basketball player. He's not an NBA player, but Steve Alford's a legend. What are you talking about? Steve Alford? He was unstoppable. You might want to go look up Steve Alford.
What did they say about Larry Bird? What was that Isaiah Thomas said about Larry Bird? I mean Steve Alford looked like Indiana. Who was the other guy they had later? The second Steve Alford, Damian.
No, he wasn't. You're talking about I know you're talking about that.
Yeah.
That was he was following in the footsteps of Steve Alford, but he wasn't that guy. He was the guy that everybody thought was going to be the man ever since he was like in eighth grade. Like he was like the phenom since he was like in eighth grade.
For a guy who coached as long as Bobby Knight, the fact that he had one Hall of Fame player, he coached one Hall of Fame player, right? He probably only coached 15 All-Stars. I mean, Steve Alford was never an All-Star in the NBA. Kent Benson was never an All-Star in the NBA. I mean,
Steve Alford at Indiana averaged 20 points a game. At Indiana.
I mean, listen, my point was Bobby Knight squoze as much talent as he could out of Steve Alford. He squoze as much talent as he could out of Keith Smart and all these other
players. Alan Henderson.
Alan Henderson was a good NBA player. Isaiah Thomas was an exceptional NBA player. But this is what you can't do.
You can't look at Indiana through the prism of NBA players. You have to look at them through the prism of outstanding college player. Like, Quinn played for him. Quinn Buckner.
Quinn Buckner.
Come on. Now, he had some hell of five players.
Yeah, Quinn Buckner was a great defensive player. I loved Quinn Buckner. He was on, when I grew up watching the Chicago Bulls, he was on Jerry Sloan and Quinn Buckner in the backcourt. They stopped people one way or the other. You didn't, you know, those were two. But again, my point is that good, really great college coaches.
Calbert Chaney had some monsters, dude.
Like, monsters. He did not have monsters. He didn't have like a roster that Dean Smith or Mike Krzyzewski had, right? Where you've got this litany of Hall of Fame players that went through his program. He had one Hall of Fame player in his program, Isaiah Thomas.
But I'm talking about for college level players. He had some unbelievable guys. Like, I mean, he had Dean Garrett. Dean Garrett was not a star, but Dean Garrett in college was really good. He had a few good years with the Timberwolves.
Yeah, the only people who know Dean Garrett is Minnesotans.
Jamal Meeks. You probably don't even remember who that is.
I remember Jamal Meeks.
Greg Graham. He was another. Like, Randy Whitman. Like, he had some good players, man.
He had good players, but you are not filling a Hall of Fame roster. I mean, look at Duke. Look at Duke.
I'm not saying Hall of Fame roster, no.
I'm just saying that he won.
Damon Bailey is who you were talking
Damon
about.
Damon Bailey, who I was talking about.
He was the phenom from like eighth grade. Everybody thought he was going to be the guy.
Yeah, but he was able to win 20, 25 games with guys like Damon Bailey, right? With mid-level guys who he was
Mike
able
Woodson.
To coach. Michael Woodson, another great college player.
We mentioned Quinn Buckner.
Quinn Buckner was a great player. Those Quinn Buckner teams, when he had Scotty May and Quinn Buckner, those were great teams. But you know, he wore those teams out.
Hey, listen here. According to Bleacher Report, they have the top 50 players at Indiana. Guess who they have? And this is why I say you got to take the NBA part out of it. Guess who they have as the top player at Indiana?
Who?
Steve Alford, who I mentioned to you.
Oh, God.
He's the number one player that played at the University
of Alford. Steve Alford is not as...
You better put some respect on his name.
I mean, Isaiah Thomas was one of the great clutch point guards in the history of the NBA.
Isaiah Thomas is one of the greatest point guards we've ever seen.
100%.
Isaiah Thomas, in my opinion, Isaiah Thomas is the best player that coach has ever... that he ever coached.
Yeah, 100%. I would say one of the most underrated NBA players ever.
All right, hey, so
ooh, we have a question.
So hold on. Can we do it now? We'll just delay the break because Tim Cheetah is joining us courtesy of the John Shutakoa Banker Hotline. Tim is exiting the barn. Tim, what the heck did you just witness? One of the big upsets. Did you rush the court?
I was tempted to, Henry. I was tempted to. I've watched a few slip away from him in the past few weeks, so I was really glad for Dawson Garcia. He had a great night, and you know, it's a game that these kids will remember the rest of their lives.
Tim,
really fun.
Tim, you know I love you, man. I got to come down and see you and have a drink and just kind of catch up, but I'm a little bit disappointed. Yeah, Tim, you're Tim Cheetah. You got to go out on the court. You got to take a selfie with the kids, Tim.
Yeah, I'll watch. You know, Henry, it's just like a bench clearing brawl when you're an umpire, man. Stay out of it because you'll wind up on the bottom of the pile.
Oh, my goodness. Well, I appreciate you calling in, my man, and I absolutely wanted to talk to you tonight. I texted you earlier because one of the greats, man, one of the great personalities, Mr. Baseball, Bob Uecker, passed away at the age of 90. I guess just your thoughts on Bob Uecker as one of the legendary baseball men out there that I'm sure that you had a chance to talk to from time to time.
I was fortunate enough to be able to call Bob a dear friend, and as were all of us umpires. He visited our rooms on a regular basis, and he really got to know us all personally and individually. And later on, it was always fun pulling into the stadium in Milwaukee because we had to park our car right next to his Harley. And then Bob would always stop by. And then later on in my career, when I would get a young umpire on my crew, I would call him and ask him if he would come down and get a picture taken with the new guy. And Bob always answered me with two words with that request. He would say, "What time?" And he'd show up and get the kid a picture, which was a great memento for a young umpire. And he was kind. He was humble. He was genuine. He also, we were fortunate in that he stayed at the hotels that we stayed at because he didn't like staying where the Brewers were, because all the autograph seekers that hang around those hotels would more autographs from him than they would from the players. And he always felt uncomfortable with that because he was very, very humble, and he was, you know, just a wonderful, wonderful man. And what a great run, 90 years. And he was calling games right up till last season. You know, he was going to go back again this year.
Yeah.
You know, so I'm glad it wasn't a long goodbye. But what a great man. Hey, and a dear friend.
We're talking to Tim Cheetah, former Major League Baseball umpire, here on the Lake Show on News Talk 830 WCCO. And I guess, you know, one of the things that you just have to love about somebody like Bob Uecker is that they just had such an amazing personality. You just talked about him being such a great person. And, you know, I just look at everything that he brought to the sport of baseball. That's what you love about sports, are good people with vibrant, big personalities, because those are the people that draw in the fans to the sport. It isn't just about the box scores and what guys are doing on the field, but it's also about what guys are doing off the field, too.
Particularly, you know, baseball is a game that's made for radio, and it's a game that is, you know, you can have it on and be doing something else. But that voice you're hearing on a regular basis, you know, going back to Red Barber, Vin Scully, Herb Carneal, Ernie Harwell, you know, and Bob Uecker's in that category, you know, that people identify the game with the voice. And then what they do in the community, you know, they're always popular on the winter caravans and all that goes with that. And I do believe that the Twins have the same thing in Corey Provis, amongst the other guys as well. But you know, he's another guy that's going to be an icon in this field for a long, long time.
Hey, Tim, sports and business attorney Stephen Silton is in studio joining us. He wants to ask you a question real quick.
Yeah, Tim, Steve Silton. Love hearing your reaction to him, because I went to college at UWM, and he kind of personified Wisconsin sports in general, the self-deprecating, little bit of a chip on the shoulder. Do you have any kind of special stories, personal stories about Bob?
Well, yeah, there was a time they were working at the Brewers were playing the Twins, and I was home because I had a sprained ankle, so I couldn't work. And I was coming out to the game, and Bob asked me if I wanted to come up in the booth for a couple innings. And I said, sure, you know. So now you guys are familiar with, and maybe the audience isn't, with the cough button, you know, on a microphone for radio.
Yep.
And Bob would, there was a play where, you know, you're sitting there with him. Oh, joining us now, Tim Sheedy coming in. And, hey, how you doing, Tim? And nice to see you, Bob. You know, thanks for the invite. You know, and he goes, and he says something about baseball, you know, and this is when Bud Selig was first named commissioner, and he made a comment about something about the game, and then he said, he hits the cough button. He goes, of course, if we had a real commissioner, we wouldn't have this problem. And he takes his hand off the button. He goes, right, Tim? And I'm laughing already, and I can't answer the question, you know. And then he goes a little further. He goes, now, here's a ground ball past first base coach Mitchell Page. Boom, what an ugly SOB he is. And covers it up again, and he goes, right, Tim? And I went, Bob, you know, I'm getting killed up here, you know. And I had to leave. My eyes were watering. I was afraid I was going to say the wrong thing. But that was Bob. He was fun all the time. We had a trip one time where we had the flight charter with the Brewers one time from Dallas to Milwaukee, because it was Memorial Day weekend, and we're going from a Sunday day game to a Monday day game, and the airlines didn't run as many flights on the holidays. So you had us sitting in first class with him, you know, and the umpires, you know, they get these seats. And he used to join us at about three or four different restaurants around the league after games quite frequently. And, you know, we were just out. We weren't out there drinking and getting stupid and getting in trouble or anything. It was just camaraderie and fun. He was not a big drinker, night owl kind of guy. He was just very social and just a wonderful human being.
Yeah. Hey, Tim, man, always a pleasure to have you on the show. And, yeah, we definitely got to catch up. I know we've been talking about it. I'll meet you over at Mancini's, man, and we'll hang out.
Get down there, Henry. Good talking with you guys. Thanks.
All right, take care. That's Tim Sheedy, a former Major League Baseball umpire, leaving the barn. He didn't storm the court, but he was in attendance. There's been some heartbreakers there. We had the game, what was it, a week and a half ago against Ohio State that we blew, but we get it done. In case you hadn't heard, the Minnesota Golden Gophers, I give them a lot of credit, they upset the Michigan Wolverines tonight at Williams Arena.
20th ranked Michigan Wolverines.
That's crazy.
Last second buzzer beater by Dawson Garcia from about, what, 38
at the
feet.
Buzzer. That's crazy.
Crazy.
Hey, real quick, you mentioned just kind of like your thoughts about Bob Uecker. Did you ever meet Bob Uecker? I never in my life ever met him.
No, never met him.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, I went to a lot of games at County Stadium. He was omnipresent there, right? I mean, he was really the face in many respects of Minnesota sports. I mean, back then when I went to college, frankly, baseball was a bigger sport than football. The Green Bay Packers weren't this kind of glorious type of special team. I could sit and rant about that. But, you know, so I mean, he was the biggest face. I mean, what he says about not staying with the players because he would have been the biggest celebrity at the hotel is absolutely true. There was nobody bigger. You know, if you could meet Robin Yount, Paul Molitor, or Bob Uecker, the fan would be like, I want to meet Bob Uecker, right?
Yeah,
what a great story. Hey, what a life well lived. And, what may his memory, as we say in my religion, may his memory forever be a blessing. So, and I'm sure it will be. People are going to be telling stories like Tim has. For a long time.
Yep.
His funeral, my guess is, will be quite an event. That's one I would actually buy tickets to.
Hey, Steve, always a pleasure having you in studio, man. Especially, I mean, I'll just say this. I'm going to give Steve Silton a lot of credit because I think he brought the Gophers good luck tonight.
I did. It was me. It was me. It was a special night. I always treasure being here in the studio. This is a night I will never forget.
Tim Cheetah at the barn. Gophers win on a walk-off.
Can't get better than that.
Upset. All right, coming up next, we've got word on the street. Late, but we still got it on the docket. We get to that next year on the Lake Show. All right, shout out to Matt, and I think it's from Little Falls, who texted us. He's all in. He's listened to the show, listened to Vanita in the morning. He's giving me a little grief because I said that the Gophers had no chance. No apologies. I didn't think that they were going to win. I'm not going to fake the funk in the morning or on this show, but they pulled it off. You know I'm going to root for the Gophers. I'm not rooting against the Gophers, but I didn't think that they had it in them. Of all the teams to beat, they pulled the upset tonight. Love it. But shout out to Matt. I think it's Little Falls.
Yeah.
You know, sometimes the talk to text can get a little quirky. And so yeah. Shout out to him.
Maybe Matt just got a little excited in Lanittle.
He didn't fat finger it.
Lanittle Falls?
I think it's talk to text.
Okay. Because if I say Lanittle, that sounds like it's something that I shouldn't even be Googling. So, Ms. Hat from Lanittle. Lanittle.
See, why are you giving Matt grief now?
I like Matt.
I know you're having fun.
I know. I like Matt. I don't even know Matt, but Matt seems like an awesome fellow.
Shut up, Matt.
Shut up, Matt from Lanittle. Hey, huge stars are going to be on stage for the upcoming concert to help the thousands of folks who lost it all in the L.A. fires, and some of the headliners have deep L.A. roots. Lady Gaga, Billie Eilish, and the Red Hot Chili Peppers, might want to change that name after everything that went down, will be among the 15 acts that have been booked so far to hit the stage 2 weeks from today. Lineup also includes Green Day, Jelly Roll, and Gracie Abrams. Benefit concert has become so big, there are going to be two venues, the Intuit Dome and the Kia Forum, both in Inglewood. Now, the initial plan was for 24 artists and bands to perform, but more than 50. This is cool. More than 50 have thrown their hat in the ring, and they expect that number could expand. Concert will be streamed, and organizers expect to raise millions for disaster relief. Now, it sounds like many of the acts will be L.A. natives, like Billy, who was spotted Wednesday serving food to those affected by the wildfires, as they are the Chili Peppers. And there will be more artists announced shortly, so stay tuned.
But this is what it's all about. When people need your assistance, when they need your help, lend a helping hand. That's what it's all about.
Yeah, absolutely. Hey, here's a really interesting story here. It's a little bit longer, so stay with me here. I don't know if you're really familiar with the Justin Baldani and Blake Lively situation, but Justin Baldani is continuing his legal crusade against it. His It Ends With Us co-star Blake Lively.
Yeah, he's the one that everybody was talking about with the sexual harassment.
Sexual assault, yeah. Yep. And he and his production company just filed a massive lawsuit against Blake, her husband Ryan Reynolds, her publicist Leslie Sohn, seeking hundreds of millions of dollars. Now, Justin and his company, Wayfarer Studios, which produced It Ends With Us, filed this federal suit ripping Blake and Leslie for their alleged campaign to smear Baldoni and snatch away control of the movie, which he directed and co-starred in with Blake. According to the documents, quote, determined to make Baldoni the real-life villain in her story to deflect from getting publicly trashed as tone-deaf during the film's media tour. Now, Justin says he was promoting her hair care and alcohol line while promoting a film about domestic violence. In the suit, Justin says the war between himself and Blake really started back in May 2023 when they started shooting the movie. He claims she was organizing what he called a takeover strategy as they battled for creative control. Justin also calls out Blake's husband for getting involved in the writing of the script. He says Blake had done a rewrite of the film's critical rooftop scene where the main characters meet, and they had a meeting at Blake and Ryan's New York City penthouse to discuss it. But now he feels it was more of an ambush. Justin says Ryan was there from the start, singing the praises of Blake's rewrite. And then hours later, Blake's pal Taylor Swift popped in with her two cents, also applauding Blake's version of the scene. Mm. So he later texted Blake to say he liked what she'd written and would have felt that way even without Ryan's input. Sony Studios, the film's distributor, told Wayfarer Blake refused to promote the film unless they allowed her to do her own cut. So they made it a competition. Justin says both his version and Blake's would be shown to an audience, and whichever tested better would be the final cut. Baldani says his version, quote, scored significantly higher with key audience demographics, but claims, not surprisingly, that Blake reneged on her promise and insisted Sony release her version, which it did. Justin then says he essentially was forced to fire himself from directing the movie. Even after all of that capitulation, he claims the pressure and smearing continued as the movie was rolled out. All of the cast unfollowed Baldani on social media and backed Blake.
So essentially, just to kind of summarize, this whole situation is about to get ugly.
Yes, it is. It is the perfect definition of a he said, she said. Like, it's this. I mean, I knew there were always like issues, but man, this is something else. Hey, Jessica Alba is finally speaking out after the bombshell news drop that she and husband Cash Warren are calling it quits. In an Instagram post earlier today, the actress shared she's been on a journey of self-discovery and growth for years, both alone and with Cash. And while she's proud of their marriage over the last two decades, she's ready to step into a new chapter of evolution and personal growth. Jessica made it clear there's no bad blood, signing off her post with "We're moving forward with love, kindness, and respect for each other. We'll forever be family. Our children remain our highest priority. We request privacy at this time." Last week, it was reported that the pair had recently separated, were moving forward with a divorce. Public signs of trouble included Cash and Jessica being spotted without their wedding rings. They met on the set of Fantastic Four in 2004, Jessica starring, Cash working as a director's assistant, got engaged in 2007, married a year later. They share three children, 16-year-old Honor, 12-year-old Haven, and 7-year-old Hayes.
Yeah. I think a lot of times in Hollywood, people don't really care that much about how long people are together, but they have been together so long, I was really rooting for them, but, you know, it happens, man.
Yeah, sometimes it does. And finally here, because I know we're kind of up against it, but this is also a really cool story. Bruce Willis thanking first responders in Los Angeles after wildfires took a toll on the city, making an extremely rare appearance in public. The actor's wife, Emma Hemming, just shared a video of Bruce shaking hands and chatting up a couple of LAPD officers on the streets of L.A. Now, he's hardly ever seen in public these days in the wake of his dementia diagnosis. His wife and kids share photos of him every so often at family events, but we don't really see him outside anymore. In the black and white video, Bruce is wearing a shirt, jacket, New York Yankees cap as he chats, shakes hands with a couple of cops, and snaps some photos with the officers. Bruce's wife says spotting a first responder, Bruce never missed an opportunity to show his gratitude with a heartfelt handshake and a thank you for your service, and yesterday was no different. He retired from acting in March 2022 when his family announced his grueling dementia battle. So it's pretty cool to see him chopping it up with police officers, considering he plays an NYPD officer in Die Hard.
Yeah, definitely wishing Bruce Willis nothing but the best, but definitely, you know, he's going through it with the dementia battle. All right, that's going to wrap up Word on the Street. We'll take a brief pause. And then wrap up the show, final, 2 minutes or so, coming up next year on The Good Neighbor. All right, final couple of minutes here, I think 3 minutes to be exact, here on the show. Thanks to Tim Cheetah for calling into the show, talking about Bob Uecker, who passed away at the age of 90. Stephen Silton for joining us in studio, breaking all things sports business analysis down for us. And then we also have Matthew Collar kind of wrapping up the season and taking a look ahead to the free agency for the Minnesota Vikings. The Minnesota Golden Gophers, the upset of the night, they knocked off. They knocked off Michigan. How about that, man? You got to love it, bro.
Well, and if there's a team you want to beat to get your first win, I mean, it's a ranked team, and it's, you know, one of the higher profile teams in the Big Ten.
Listen, Michigan went to UCLA and spanked UCLA mm-hmm. a couple of weeks ago. Spanked them. UCLA ranked. Well, you would think that, I don't want to say spanked us, but you would think that we probably don't pull out that win tonight. Michigan was favored by 11 points. 11!
Hey, we'll take it.
We will take it. Absolutely, we will take it.
So great job, Ben Johnson. Great job. Again, you just... Will this change the trajectory of the season?
I got people texting me from Florida. Go Gophers!
Hey!
We'll take it.
Yeah, this doesn't change anything for the season, but, man, it's just...
Oh, wait till you see the bracketology, baby.
Yeah, I know.
Hey, we need to check with Joel and Artie.
They're going to be on the bubble. This is starting the run, right? That improbable run. But you just feel good for the kids to get one.
Yes, you do.
I mean,
all jokes aside.
Yeah. You want to feel good. And I mean, these kids have taken, they've taken a lot of heat. You know, they're probably sick and tired of hearing about it. And you know what? I don't blame them. So, yeah, congratulations, you guys. Well done.
We need a feel-good game.
For sure.
People bummed out this week. Viking season's over. The Wild are banged up. The Wolves were down by 20 last night, and they crawl back into it and lose by one.
If only they could offensive rebound.
In the way that they won. Like, they won at the buzzer.
I know. And it wasn't even like...
It wasn't like they drew it up.
No, and it wasn't even like... It wasn't the best shot. I mean, that was no. if you're going to win it, you might as well win it from damn near half court. I mean, let's just be honest. It adds to everything. If you're going to get a win, do it in the most dramatic way possible.
That was awesome.
Yeah.
That was awesome.
All good, right. So good for them.
So thanks everybody that joined the show tonight. We're back at it tomorrow night at 6 p.m. We'll take you to 9. Another late show on deck. Another late show with decent temps, because it sounds like by the time we get to Sunday and Monday, we're not going to even get over zero, I don't think. I think we're going to be below zero Sunday and Monday.
Polar vortex, baby. Let's go.
I'm just kidding. I can broadcast from home, though, so that's fine.
Yeah, you can. My car won't even start.
Talk to you tomorrow.